This line is burning, turning to ashes. It hits the ear. Every step is a day in the week. It's a Sunday or Monday, March all the months of the year.
Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce.
The intent for today is divine grace. We're used to thinking about these things, for the most part, in our culture, rather theologically, to say in terms of ideas, so much more than anything close to an experience, so in terms of abstract ideas that take their form from our worldly social life. But the Gnostic tradition calls us to experience, to deep inner spiritual experience, and not to accept ideas without that experience. The lesson for today speaks of keeping silence on the mysteries. It is very adamant about this, that not even for the sake of the goods of the whole world should you trade the mysteries to somebody who is not worthy of them. Think of this in some rather odd ways, sort of being the magical keys to salvation or something that you're not supposed to hand out to somebody who isn't worthy, so they might sneak in, get into that exclusive club of heaven that has all the company you don't want to keep in it anyway. But our tradition focuses on things on a much more real level. Mysteries is a broad term, but in the ancient context in which this text was written, these refer to understandings and also practices. Ways of transforming ourselves, ways of relating to the divine at a very visceral level with our whole being, and our understandings that have arisen from this. So they take place in a developmental context, in a context where we are growing, where the people participating in the mysteries are growing. And it takes place in a separate context, in a different atmosphere than one's day-to-day life. There's always a period of preparation for any of the mystery traditions. And then one goes through some process of initiation, of beginning the mysteries. And then there are generally, at least in later, more developed forms, multiple layers and levels of mysteries, so that they take one deeper into that relationship with the divine, and deeper into one's growth and development, further into that development. There is an aid to this process. If one separates them from that process, then there is not just a sharing of secrets, as it were, but that's also a way to derail that process. Talk about, probably have all done, at inappropriate times and to people we really shouldn't, our spiritual process or inner journey, and you know exactly what this text is talking about. That most people are not ready to have any serious consideration of these things. And that sharing with them in the wrong atmosphere, a way in which it doesn't include this, the gnosis of it, the core of it, the process, then people get stuck the ideas of these things. And they think they know what's going on. Or they ridicule them. Or they get you to look at them all as being strange ideas as well, instead of techniques for your own growth. And it would be nice if we weren't influenced by other people at some times, but we always are. We are not these ideal separate beings that aren't influenced by other people. Even in a very good, deep way, we are influenced. Sure, when we're young, it might be socially. And as we grow, develop ourselves, we still are influenced by the consciousness of other people, by their perspective. Why? Because usually it's useful for us. We don't want to be solipsistic. We don't want to be completely removed and think we have the answer, or we'll never get the answer. We, as seekers, as people who are engaged in this process of development, do so in a community of some kind, whether it be through a community that merely is the nature of books left behind by people who are no longer here, or community of people who are engaged in this process now. There is always this community going on. But we also have our larger communities of friends or family, and so forth. And if we try to share the whole of our process with people who are going to not understand it even as a developmental process, then the way they reflect back to us what we're going through might actually be detrimental to our process. Very simple. Not that there is some need for secrecy. It's just that you don't go to your banker and talk about your love life. I mean, it's just a crossing of categories that you shouldn't expect to turn out well. You talk to work friends about your spiritual life, and they'll either think you're trying to recruit them or that you're some other kind of a nut. But if you understand that what you need is somebody else who is going through a developmental process as well, you discuss these things with somebody who, in the text, is worthy of the mysteries. Furthermore, it helps if they're familiar, at least, with the way in which you are understanding the particular tradition you're going through. Though it can also be very beneficial to talk to somebody who isn't familiar with that, who's going through a completely different tradition, but who is engaged in that level of spiritual growth, in that dynamic process. And these are initiates, maybe not in the tradition of mystery that you're going through, but they have begun, they have initiated in a process of a similar nature. With those, one can speak to some larger extent about what's going on. Problems with sharing your spiritual journey, that it's always going to be shared in a way that is metaphorical, that is symbolic, that is tied up with stories and with various different ideas. You can't express it directly. And if you express it in a way that is merely understood, not as having those things refer back to a process, but as just those things, then you may get stuck paying more attention to those things than to the process itself. And it can derail your process. These are very practical reasons for this advice in the gospel that one should not share the mysteries with those who are not worthy, those who are not prepared to begin such a process, those who are not already engaged in such a process. So they will be not only wasted on them, but it will be detrimental to your own growth, and it may even be detrimental to their growth, because they encounter these things again later. They may think they already know what they are. In our modern world, where we have all of these texts and all of these stories and everything available to everyone, tends to be this mixing of them all together, as if they were all intended to be written as one book and bound together. See this very clearly with the group of scriptures usually referred to as the Bible. It was written across millennia for various different purposes, edited together on the order of the particular books, and then all the books gathered together and translated with reference to one another instead of as separate books as they originally were. Then you have people today coming to that as if it were written for them in this particular translation, all together, intended to be all together from the very beginning. And you know, walking away with some of the weirdest ideas you'll ever encounter in your life from reading the book that way. We know from historical accounts that Gnostic texts were not by any means sitting on the shelf in the category of a modern Bible, and that these collections that we have wouldn't have been read straight through by anybody. These are things to be considered, to be understood as a part of one's own process, not as a part of some external collection or a canon of scripture. They're not all of the same kind. And all for your mere edification. They are something that has a relationship to the process you're going through if you're on the path of Gnosis. And when you're on that path, there is that recognition the lesson talks about, of seeing one another as sons of light, children of the light. That the primary relationship that matters is that one with the divine, and that we can relate to one another on those terms. We are all on this process. wherever we're at on the process, and to a large extent of whatever tradition we might be following. For a whole lot of the process is fairly similar across traditions. It's only when you get beyond a certain point these paths seem to diverge. Growing up as a spiritual being, getting out of our spiritual adolescence, is a huge part of all these spiritual traditions. We can recognize that. We can support one another in that, regardless of the form these things take. The gospel for today is from John. It's one of those texts that is kind of glossed over usually in a lot of orthodox understandings, because in it, Jesus just appears in a room with the shut doors. And when one is trying to really desperately cling to the idea of a physically reanimated type of resurrection, where the dead body is brought back to life and moves around, the suddenly appearing thing is a bit of a problem. Furthermore, they don't seem to recognize Christ until he shows him the wounds. So there's another issue that reoccurs in the four Gospels, canonical Gospels. People not recognizing the risen Christ right away. They have to be given some sort of sign or go through some process before they can recognize. And after they recognize, this is what's called the Great Commission, usually. Though there is a previous pre-crucifixion commission to go forth and teach. This is the one that Christ sends the disciples forth. And he does something that is essentially the prototype or archetype of ordination as clergy. He breathes upon them and tells them, "Receive the Holy Spirit. Whosoever sins you remit, shall be remitted. Whosoever sins you retain, they shall be retained." Lots of ways of understanding this. The one that our minds probably fall into this rut of thinking of this is in terms of confession. And this is really where the support for a sacrament of confession comes from. But in the Gnostic tradition, there isn't a sacrament of confession. Five mysteries, and confession isn't one of them. And there isn't a whole lot of emphasis on confession, even though, as bearers of the tradition of apostolic Christianity, it's a part of the tradition. But it isn't central. It isn't considered to be useful in any kind of a regular sense. We have to do this all the time. And so we're bidden to look at this in a different way than as some sort of authority granted to then dismiss sins in an act of confession. Instead, look at it more experientially, more as human beings involved with other human beings. See that this is universal. In the same way that we have interactions with other people about our process, about our spiritual growth, and those can be beneficial or detrimental, we also, as human beings, commit a lot of errors, do a lot of silly or perhaps outright stupid things from time to time. And there is a sense in which other people try to keep these things going. There's kind of this burden of error that we might feel ourselves for doing, you know, even the most inanely stupid things. Things that are trivial, that don't really matter, but somehow we identify with that action more than with who we truly are and burden ourselves with it. We might also be reminded constantly by other people of this burden of error. Well, that's the idiot who did that. And that is helping them retain that error, to identify with that error, to identify with some mistake, perhaps. And so I think part of the emphasis on forgiveness is to help someone not identify with any mistake they may have made, identify with their potential, with the divine aspect of themselves, and in that way help them to grow beyond the mistake, to enter into that developmental process of growth, spirit, self, and become more, not forever be held back by a mistake. Christ was very certain, at least in one of the stories, that everyone present had done something stupid at some point in their life. You who with those without sin cast the first stone. In a world in which so many of our cultural rules, etc., are really zealously enforced, things can become more important than all the positive spiritual values we might have. more important than love. I'm sure we all know, either directly or indirectly, people who have disowned their children for doing something, or for being something, God forbid, that isn't approved, you know, disowning the gay kid because, ooh, that's bad somehow, or a kid who got pregnant before they got married, or something like that, that in the grand scheme of things, how important is all this stuff? But they are holding on, not to their own errors, of course. Most people who hold on to errors and sins and so forth aren't that mindful of their own. They're really mindful of other people's. And they hold on to them for them. So we can see this in this universal aspect, that when we are dealing with each other, to deal with each other, at least try to, as being all children of the light, as having this divine connection, divine origin. We can't rely upon that, in the sense of this lesson warns us, you know, sharing the mysteries, having everyone that we encounter be fully trustworthy of being a part of our inner process. But we can certainly aid them in their process by recognizing the light within them rather than anything else. That positive regard, that positive attention can be transformative. Its absence can be devastating. This happens from time to time when someone seeks to have attention by going out and killing a bunch of people. Finally get people interested in their lives by doing something horrible. This isn't a merely modern phenomenon. There is a story of a Greek athlete who lost, was such a horribly sore loser, he had all of his identity tied up with being an athlete, with being successful in that way, that when he lost, all he wanted to do was to take a bunch of people with him. And he actually pulled down the walls of a school and crushed himself and others. And the strange advice that the people got when they went to the oracle to see what to do about this was to build a hero shrine to this person. This person who had gone nuts. But there was a tradition of honoring heroes, as well as gods and spirits of place and so forth in ancient Greece. And the way to put this spirit to rest was to do some sort of honoring. Finally see this suffering human being who went nuts, did this horrible crime, as a human being. And that and their understanding put his shade to rest. We go about our lives. So often we see what we want to see. We mold and shape people into what we expect them to be. We impose our limitations on each other. And this has an effect. It doesn't turn them into violent criminals. It doesn't help them not do that either. And when this dark fate comes, the only thing that might help someone escape it is consciousness. Is the light. Otherwise, they may seek out that dark fate, collaborate with the forces of destiny, and choose to fulfill that. Maybe nothing we can do. Maybe nothing in this world as Gnostics see it. It's a lot of crazy, messed up stuff. But this, if we can, might help. And it will certainly help us in seeing that divine spark in each other. It makes it much more readily accessible for us to see it within ourselves. When we can recognize that recognition is gnosis. And as we grow, we aid others around us in their growth. As being a mature person among little kids means that you really want to look out for them and maybe help them if you can. Same with the maturity of the inner side of the person, the maturity of the spirit, the mind. If we are seeing that for what it is, we can aid in its growth and not be a part of the forces that are always condemning, always attempting to make a current state of something into its essence. Pretend that someone in a dire straits or who isn't developed is somehow inherently bad or inherently pointless. This is not the case. There is a spark of the divine within everyone, the seed of light waiting to grow. As we cultivate within ourselves, we can aid others by recognizing that in them as well. So may the mystery of that which hangs twixt heaven and earth send upon us and remain with us always. information and resources on Gnosticism, visit the Gnosis Archive at gnosis.org. That's GNOSIS.org. And the Gnosis Institute at gnosisinstitute.org. You'd like to continue receiving these podcasts, please consider a voluntary subscription of either $13 or $25 a year. That's $1 to $2 a month to make it possible to continue to provide this service. Thank you.